Welcome to this brand new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. This podcast is hosted by Mark van Horek and myself, Elias Krum. We're both from Marketing Guys, a MarTech agency based out of the Netherlands. Welcome on this new episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. We're recording a series on how to generate business during these fast changing times, how to generate more business, how to adapt your business, etc. So welcome back, Mark.
Yes, hello, Elias. Looking forward to this episode two.
Yeah, during this episode, we're going to talk some traditional marketing because we're also talking about all kinds of new stuff, MarTech stuff. And yes, we are going to give you some tips on which tools to use. But during this podcast, I would like to emphasize new business. And this sounds a little strange, I would say, because during these times, a lot of sales guys have tried to reach out to companies, have already stopped reaching out because a lot cannot be achieved, budgets are frozen. And I want to, you know, stop talking about this negative approach and talk about the opportunities that are there during this podcast. And I think there are loads of opportunities, even to grow your business, to grow your pipeline during this heavy coronavirus time, because as you might have seen in the news, there are a lot of companies growing in sales, actually.
Yes, I think that's the whole reason why we're doing this these sessions, is to really give you ideas and suggestions that not everything has to be gloom and doom. The whole thing is that changes, the normal situation has changed, so it's not business as usual anymore. But on the other hand, by using your creativity and your imagination and good old-fashioned data research, you can find opportunities, and that could mean that you could find new niches, new places where you can thrive.
Absolutely. And I'm not completely sure that I'm with you on that nothing is normal, etc. Because if we go back to literature, and I'm just remembering my days in business school, first or second year, I did my business school, I've done my MBA, and during all those, let's say, marketing theory classes, everyone that followed them has at some point seen the Ansoff matrix. Have you seen that, Mark?
Ansoff, gosh, yeah, sure.
Absolutely. So
Ansoff, Philip Kotler, and so, oh gosh, those are all
of course, my marketing. So nothing new, and I just say people that think that the world's never going to be the same just should read their history lessons and should look at the models. But, you know, the Ansoff matrix is about new and existing markets versus new and existing products and the combinations that you can have there. And, you know, the Ansoff matrix is very much applicable in this situation because, you know, yes, we have seen a lot of markets in which the demand has declined or even completely stopped because of all kinds of government measures. Like if you're in restaurant business, of course, it's very hard, or organizing events, you know, and even there are new opportunities. But especially if you're in B2B, you might think budgets are frozen, but then you should, I would say, take a look at the Ansoff matrix. So if you have an existing market and an existing product and you're penetrating that market, because that's the market penetration quadrant in the matrix, and you have found out that nothing can be gained in that market share at the moment, you have to do something. And the things that you can do there, according to Ansoff, is find new markets. So put your existing products in new markets, or your existing market might need some new products where you have product development. So you're talking either market development or product development, or you're trying a new product in a new market, which is the diversification quadrant. So there are actually three quadrants that you can pick from if your own market penetration and your own market is declining. Am I making sense, Mark?
Well, it's looking, if I'm going back to the good old days that I was at high school, at the business school education, where I get all this information. But yes, you're true. There's the basics are still there. It's not that that's completely gone. What I also meant with things, well, change is the only constant is change. Some is said, and that's true. There is always a change. Only this time, the change has for several sectors had been very immense. And then doing business as usual, as you did before, might not be possible. And then it's very good to have a look at different opportunities. And Ansoff can help you with that. And it's, as I said, it's nothing new. I had it during my economics education at the end of the 80s, that long ago. So, and this whole thing, the Ansoff can help you to boost your creativity
and define your strategy. So actually, when you're and it's, you know, this whole positive side of this whole Corona thing could also be that you're forced to think about your strategy, which you might have done anyway in a couple of years. You're forced to do that now, and so the three quadrants that you could think about is market development. So an existing product in a new market, you can diversify by saying, hey, I'm gonna formulate or build a complete new product or service in a new market, or you're gonna do a new product in your existing market. So there might be need for some new product in your market. So that's what I want to leave it to in the theory part, because we also want to see, like, in practice, what kind of tools can you use to define those new products and new markets? There's actually some MarTech tools that you can use pretty well to find out what people are looking for. So one of the things that is very handy in here is Google Trends. So if you Google for Google Trends, you can find the search volumes and the intent that people have in specific subjects. So if you're putting a keyword in there, Google will tell you what the trend will be. So you'll see that some products have the whole trend has gone down, and for others it has gone up. But it's a nice indicator to see what your new product or your new market combination could be like, and if it's going to be successful, if there's a demand for it. Another tool that you could use is SEO tooling, like SEMrush. We're using it all the time, but SEMrush is an SEO tool which tells you what search volumes are, what competitors are doing based on your keywords. You can look up if you're putting in keywords, it will tell you alternative keywords, it will tell you demand, it will tell you all kinds of stuff. And it's a tool you have to pay a little subscription fee for, but there are probably some free tools as well, but SEMrush is a favorite of ours. Of course, we're gonna use Google Analytics, because Google Analytics still is gonna show you which parts of your website are popular at the moment and which are not. So what's very specifically into your Google Analytics, look into detail into which parts of your website are favorite and which have declined or grown over the past 2 or 3 months. So I'm talking about March, April, beginning of May here.
Actually, what we're doing here is I think it's, we've got a four-step approach in this whole thing, and that is how you going to make your market bigger. And what you just said, Elias, is and by giving these tools, what we're doing here, we are researching what your market could be, and not just what it is at this moment.
Absolutely.
So it's good old data research. And besides using all these tools, just go around to the social media, talk with existing customers, talk with others, get the input so that you can define in your mind how big you want to make your market. And big is not a lot of the same, but bigger is also more looking to different vantage points of how your product or service can be used.
Absolutely.
And once again, you come with the Ansoff, because that's
great point, Mark. So I just realized now that we haven't given, let's say, a structure or layout of this podcast, but let me try to formulate the 4 points before going on to the second, because I was still at the first one. So first of all, we need to define strategy, and we're using Ansoff for that. So that's the first step. And we have also mentioned some of the tooling that you could use to do that. And we're going to share that in the keynotes, of course. But Ansoff strategy, first step. Then the second step would be on focusing on the promising markets. So which markets for you are promising? That's the second one. The third one is the creation of a wish list containing existing clients for upsell, ideal profile prospects, and dream clients. And the fourth step is actually where the execution comes in. We're going to talk about how to approach your prospects. And that's the fourth step. Thanks for bringing that up, Mark, because I realized that Dick completely dove into the whole podcast, but the structure wasn't clear yet. But okay, I'll put the structure in the show notes as well. But let's move on to the second one, because we've mentioned the first step, Ansoff strategy, and the second one would be focus on promising markets. And you know, I can't say it enough. You know, of course, I feel with people that are in the restaurant business, hotel business, people that had to shut down. If you're a keynote speaker at the moment, you know, life is hard. I completely agree that. But on the other hand, you see, there's just read the news, follow the results at Yahoo Finance or whatsoever of companies. There's tons of companies benefiting at the moment. I just want to pick a few out. One of them would be, of course, pharma. You know, all pharma are at their busiest at the moment. So they're trying to find out a new vaccine, but also all the people that equip there in healthcare, etc. Like the people at Philips or Roche, or you know, all the pharmaceuticals, they're completely busy, and everybody is demanding a lot from them, and they're busier than ever at the moment. So both, I would say, pharma, so the pharmaceuticals, and the second one being healthcare, are ideal prospecting areas at the moment, or industries. A third one could be software as a service. Everybody knows that software as a service in these times is growing. All kinds of companies are using remote working solutions. They're all using the CRM software. Everybody's going to adopt software as a service. So all these companies with, I would say, millions of software as a service companies are booming at the moment. Same for software services, the largest software vendors, etc. All these software services, including, I would say, security services, and you can elaborate a little on that probably, Mark, but you know, everybody's looking for security at the moment. So we've talked about pharma, healthcare, software as a service, software services. And can you say something about the security market at the moment, because that's one of your interests, and you have a business yourself in security as well. So elaborate a little on that, Mark.
Yeah, well, a lot of things on what you just pointed at. If you look at the bigger picture, the world has become increasingly more digital, and I read somewhere that we, because of this crisis, we've gone from 2020 to 2030. What digital advancement and treatment concerns. And everything that is in that digital space, that's a place where there are opportunities. And you already had the SaaS software services. So the underlying thing is digital. And I'm also in the cybersecurity business, and we can see it also in that part. And that is a cybersecurity points at another thing, and that's taking away risk, anxiety, uncertainty. And I think that if you can find that your product or your service can take away these fears and uncertainties and anxieties, that you will can see opportunities on that place too. So it's becoming more digital. It is talking of approaching these emotions part, and everything, and of course the healthcare and pharma, everything is of course, and that's a part of the anxiety part, is that you want to be in good health more than ever than before. And so those are very much opportunity markets.
Yeah, I'd like to add a few, because that's not the only industry. So as you mentioned, pharma, healthcare, software as a service, security,
software finance and so.
Finance, you know, just think about the whole broad spectrum of finance companies. I'm talking banks, accountancy firms, you know, all those accountancy firms. I've spoken to a few the past few weeks. You know, they, of course, mergers and acquisitions is pretty silent at the moment, you know, they're not taking the place, but that's going to pick up after summer, they think. But all the other things within accountancy, consultancy on accountancy, all the measures that are being taken by governments, etc., everything needs to be communicated, calculated, being consulted on, etc. And also another thing, you know, it's banks, accountancy firms, but what about insurances? You know, all these insurances, everything needs to be insured. They're busier than ever at the moment. When people feel insecurity, they're trying to secure that by insurances, etc. So those companies are very busy. So finance, like the whole broader aspect, investment banking, everything is busy as hell, I would say. The final one that I would like to point out here are the NGOs. And the NGOs, they are doing a lot of good work at the moment, but to do that work, that increased work amount, they need tooling, they need people, they need to have the right products, they need to have the right infrastructure, they need to be able to communicate their message, etc. So all the NGOs, it's a huge market and it's booming as well. So we've pointed out a few here. It's probably not the whole
thing. No, I think that an important thing is that try to find which sectors are very much, because you got a part of the sectors that can't do anything at this moment or in a very limited way, but you also see branches and industries that are overwhelmed at this moment.
Absolutely. And
how can you help by making things more efficient, making things more clear, more insightful, so that overwhelmness, you can help tackle that? And I also want to approach, and you've mentioned that several times, Elias, is that although some certain situations are not ideal at this moment, times will change. So also think for solutions and opportunities that might not be at this moment, but you can prepare for the moment that things will pick up again. Because if you're going to do that at that moment, you'll be one number 13 in a dozen. But if you do it now, if you think ahead, when things will get loose, when things will pick up again, and you've done your preparation and you've made you created the solutions, etc., then you can ride out the wave completely instead of being a laggard on that.
Yeah, or jump on it too late because, you know, everybody that serves knows that that doesn't work. So, but one extra thing I'd like to add to this second step in this approach, you know, focus on promising markets. If you have thought about going international or overseas, you know, don't put those plans in the fridge now. This is the time to go international because absolutely your market is bigger when you think abroad. So the couple of percentages or maybe tens of percentages that your market goes down nationally, you can absolutely find internationally. So if you have thought about entering a new market, you know, think about what that market looks like in the country next to yours or overseas. You know, this is the time to go overseas to compete with those companies that are working overseas already. But you know, your market is so much bigger international, and everybody that does services or products internationally will recognize this. But you know, this is the time to go international. Find those markets, you know, and just we as a Dutch nation are used to work internationally. But you know, even here, if my market would go down 20%, we're only 17 million people here. We're a tiny little country. You know, if we go to a market like the UK or Germany or France or Spain or even the US, you know, every market is bigger than ours. So the opportunity is huge there. And it's not as hard as you might imagine. We have an EU, there still is. The relationship with the US is very well, you know, and it's not that hard to sell your products. You know, of course, sometimes you need to be approved by several agencies or whatsoever, but in most markets, you know, it's pretty easy to go abroad, and you know, it's easier to create those markets internationally than you think.
Yeah, and I think by going as the world becomes more and more digital, digital actually means also international.
Absolutely.
Because there's no physical limitation with and even if you're in e-commerce or whatever, then you can still ship all over the world. That Absolutely. Hasn't stopped.
Absolutely. So, and tools that we have used, you know, it's so so I would say easy to create those. You know, if we're creating those lead generation campaigns for a lot of companies internationally. So when you're doing those campaigns, why not, considering if you're doing those in the UK, why wouldn't you take the Nordics or Germany or France or the Benelux? You know, it's creating those is easier than you think, and it's very leveraged, very easy to leverage when you're using tools. And you know, the tools that I mentioned here is LinkedIn, Google Ads. In Germany, don't forget about Xing, which is the German LinkedIn, of course. In France, you might have to work with distributors and etc. But all these countries have their own specific needs. But and we can help you with that. But it's absolutely worthwhile investigating what you can do internationally.
Yeah, I think that the whole international approach. Take that in your consideration in your first step within your ANSOS matrix, because it has a quite an the tools are there to make it possible, but markets are not one size fits all, and so you really have to do your research. But once you've done that, and once you put that on your when you've mapped that out, then why not?
Absolutely. So that brings me basically to the third point of the list, which I'm hinted out last podcast already, but I think, and we at Marketing Guys think, it's very important to create a wish list of clients, of dream clients. So the wish list, after you have done the strategy ANSOS and you have found out your promising markets, find out, especially in B2B, which 100, 200, 300 companies you absolutely want to work from. And this list comes in very handy. I'm the first to admit that I've got this idea from Mike Weinberg. You know, look him up on LinkedIn. He wrote a lot of books on sales and marketing, especially on sales. But if you're creating that list, there are three segments on that list. And the first one is growable existing clients. So find out which existing clients you have, because everybody in marketing and sales knows that it's easier to keep clients than to find new clients and even to grow new existing clients. So make a list of your existing clients and specifically the growable existing clients. Which one can you upsell or cross-sell? Then you have a list, a second segment in that list, which would be ideal profile prospects. So which ones would you think are ideal, fit very well into your market or your product or your solutions, which one benefits from your solutions, etc. And then the third quadrant or segment would be dream clients. And the dream clients are these clients, like the, if you take the 20-80 Pareto rule, you know, the 20% of companies that you make most of your profits on, try to clone those. You know, if you have the best clients at the moment, try to find clones for them, which ones internationally, nationally, in the same industry, etc., would you like to have as a dream client? Which one brings you the most revenue, the most profits, etc.? And actually, this list is a list of names of companies. So it's not like segments or whatsoever. It's a list of actual names, and try to find out a call to action to approach them, which brings me to the next step. But first, before I go to that next step, you know, how do you find the companies that should be on that list? And I'm already mentioned, like, try to clone your existing clients, which of course makes your CRM system a very important input for this list. So your CRM, try to find out which clients you make profit on, you have the best relationships with, which are your ambassadors, etc. So your CRM is a starting point. Another thing could be industry reports. So if you look at banks, they bring out these industry reports all the time. Find out who the best in class in a certain specific industry are and try to focus those. You have lists of top 100 list or top 25, Inc. 500, all those kinds of lists. There's tons of industry reports. Of course, you're using LinkedIn. Use your sales navigator. Try to find out which companies are at the moment growing, which ones are hiring people, which ones bring out all kinds of new products, etc. Tools like marketing automation could be interesting here, because marketing automation usually has those website prospecting information, like who is visiting my website at the moment, which companies, which industries. Take a solution like Lead Forensics. Lead Forensics tells you which kind of companies have been on your website. You could segment those, and you can get a lot of valuable information from those kinds of tools. So in short, CRM, industry reports, LinkedIn, of course, Sales Navigator, marketing automation, tools like prospecting tools like a Lead Forensic, but there's tons of others.
And I would not rule out the good old-fashioned research on the social medias.
Absolutely.
If you've got a social media marketing tool like Hootsuite or Sprout Social or Octopost, you can really dive in and find the conversations that that companies and people have about certain issues that you've got a solution for. One of my favorites to look at is Quora. Known, but it has, I think, about 300 million users worldwide, and it's got an English version, but it's also branching out in Dutch and Germany and etc. And there, people ask questions, and by looking at these questions, you can find who has asked these questions, but also who are replying to it. And it's a good place to get to know your target group and your wish list.
Absolutely. Maybe. So thanks for that, Mark, because Quora, you know, it's not used too much. I would say in Europe, it's mainly a US thing. All my US friends know Quora, and you know, if you have an account on it, people tend to spend a lot of time on it, and it's a lot of valuable information. It's it's almost like a Wikipedia, but then B2B, I would say, but it answers to a lot of questions. So once you have created that wish list of 100, 200, 300 people, maybe, you know, then you'll have to execute on it, because that list is not going to become your customer automatically. You know, everybody that wants to grow pipeline will have to do something there. And that's a sales and marketing joint effort. But I would like to focus on a couple of things. But, you know, for me and for my clients, this absolutely has to do with structure and productivity. And the structure meaning, you know, you have to block 2 hours a day, I would say by preference in the morning, in which you're doing those daily prospecting. And we call them daily prospecting sales blocks. Put them in your calendar. And that's not the time in which you're going to investigate. You know, not spending your time on social media investigating. So quit using that. You know, have a list. And that the only thing you're doing is approaching those people. And approaching, I mean, it's like call them, email them, put them in prospecting funnels together with your marketing team. You can use all kinds of tools there, but you have to approach them. You know, nobody is going to come to you automatically. Of course, we have our inbound sales here, but we can set out all kinds of account-based marketing stuff. But in the end, you're going to have to approach them. And during these corona times, it could be harder to approach those people than by phone, especially than during the non-corona times, because people work from home. So you can call, usually you can call the main number at a company, but, you know, or find a company number from your prospect, but you usually don't have their cell phone number. A tool that I've used, started using the last month is a tool called Lusha, Lusha. I'll put it in the show notes, lusha.co, not .com, but .co. And Lusha is a very cool, I would say it's a Chrome plugin, Chrome widget, which works with LinkedIn and Salesforce. So the minute you open LinkedIn and you open up a profile, same with Salesforce, Lusha, your little Lusha will pop up on the right and will tell you if she has a cell phone number for you and a direct mail address. They use all kinds of databases to find that out. But I found out that Lusha has a lot of those numbers, direct email addresses of your prospects. It costs you a couple of credits. You'll get a couple for free. You know, we don't have a stake or we're not sponsored by Lusha whatsoever. But, you know, it's just my personal thing and my personal enthusiasm here. But, you know, I've started using it and I found it out to be very useful. So Lusha. Of course, you're using LinkedIn to find how to connect to people. So connect to them. And always, if you're connecting to those prospects, point out what people come to you for. So don't try to, let's say, introduce yourself, you know, tell about how big you are and how important your company is, how successful you as a company are. You know, your prospects are not interested in that. They would like to hear what their peers come to you for. So let's say if I'm introducing myself to a prospect, I'm usually saying, hey, this is Elias. You know, people like you come to me to get a positive ROI on marketing, completely measurable, data-driven lead generation campaigns. And your competitor XYZ has done that very successful. And I think we can achieve the same success with you. Would you be open for a 30-minute talk? And, you know, I'm not saying nine out of 10 times, but probably 4 to 5 out of 10 times, people respond positive on that and are open to do that 30-minute call, especially if you can have them schedule it themselves using Drift. You know, we've done that we've talked about that earlier, or Calendly or whatsoever. If they can schedule a time at their convenience, you know, they're very much open to do so. So reach out on LinkedIn, use Lusha. A tool we use as well is Wappalizer. It's a little widget which is used in your Chrome as well. Wappalizer will tell you, same as Ghostery, it's an alternative, will tell you which kind of stuff is all installed or on a website. So it will tell you which scripts are on a website, which technologies are used. And of course, you're using your CRM I would say combine that or integrate that with your marketing automation. So if I'm approaching a prospect or one of our customers is approaching a prospect, we want to give them a full view of their online touch point. So if you're using, let's say, Sugar CRM or Salesforce or Microsoft Dynamics as a sales guy, you want to see which touch points they had online. So that needs to be in your CRM. And if you want to send out a prospecting email, you don't want to type that prospecting email every time. So just use templates for your marketing automation. So if you have connected your marketing automation, being a Marketo or Acton or HubSpot or Pardot connected to your CRM, you can use those standard emails, which is saving you lots of time. And you can also track results. You can see open rates. You can see when they opened, etc. And you can set up prospecting funnels. So automated funnels, which because you need to approach people multiple times, you can do that automatically. So let the marketing automation do its work there and automate as much as you can. Mark.
It was a long story, but you do the sales, so you can tell from speak from my own experience. Mm-hmm. What I would like to add to is that make use of the data that, for instance, the marketing automation or the social media marketing tools have gathered and combined with the information that's in your CRM. For instance, marketing automation, you can have like a timeline of contacts that have visited your website, have engaged with your emails, and find out what they're interested in. And all that information is all gathered together so that when you make that call, it will feel like you're calling him for the second time. And not that it's just a complete, like a cold first introduction, because you can read between the lines with all the data that you've got, what kind of interest is there, what kind of issues, problems they have, how engaged they are. And by knowing this information, you can cater your conversation to this information so that you can become straight more to the point, not wasting the other parties their time, and come straight to the point how you can help them achieve their goals.
Absolutely. So one thing that you have to keep in mind there is that you don't send too many emails, of course, because the minute you get them on the phone, they'll be annoyed by those 20 emails you sent them. But of course, you have to be sure that, you know, just send a couple of emails from different angles, and always have people give them the possibility to sign out or change the frequency of emails that they're getting, etc. But, you know, absolutely, Mark, if we can, you know, and that's why I'm talking about a mix of approach methods, because you're trying to call them, you're trying to leave them a voicemail because you get a lot of voicemails. Then you're trying to send them emails, newsletters, you might reach out to them on LinkedIn, and in the end, they cannot ignore you. And they, you know, of course, it's a natural behavior by people to say, oh, yeah, I'm just looking, you know, I'm not interested at the moment. And it's kind of a, I would say, challenge or sport that salespeople should see, is to get through that and try to point out the benefits of not having of having contacts, and try to point out what not having the solution or contact will have as a negative result for that business, of course. But you know, that's the game of sports, the sport of and the game of sales, I would say. And I said, Mark, I like that game, of course, and I'd like to share the results and share the approach that we have. I hope these 4 points will help people to find the positive angle to grow their business even during corona times. And, you know, I hope this whole podcast will give people a positive vibe in here.
Yes, well, that's what we're doing for. It's really, we're all in this together, and if we can help you make get you ideas for new markets, new products, looking for and finding new opportunities, and helping you go ahead. Well, that's what our whole purpose is.
Absolutely.
So and make it as relevant as possible, because if you do that, the annoyment factor will decrease incredibly, because you are sending information and a message that they want at that moment.
Absolutely. So what I'd like to conclude with, you know, if you've listened to this podcast and would say, hey, I hear some good stuff in this, I'd like to let's say discuss it a little or whatsoever, I'm always open to do so. So if you want to discuss that, we can always schedule a 30-minute Zoom call or MS Teams meeting, whatever works for you. And I'm always thrilled to share my ideas to help B2B marketers to be more successful. So if you think you can, just shoot me an email on e.crum@marketingguys.nl. It's in the show notes as well. And feel free to ask for advice. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Marketing Technology Podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe to our channel. Also, if you would like to be a guest on the show, or if you know anyone that should be a guest to our show, drop me an email through e.crum@marketingguys.nl or take a look at the website marketingguys.com. Thanks for listening.